Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm here at the 2018 National Animal Interest Alliance Conference in Orlando, Florida, and I am very fortunate to have been able to steal away one of the presenters from the conference for a few minutes. And Dr. Angela Hughes is the Veterinary Genetics Research Manager for Wisdom Health.
Hello.
Hello. And I'm thrilled to get to visit with you after listening to your presentation and now kind of be able to dial in on some of these things that I think are going to be really, really interesting for our listeners. So talk to us about Wisdom Health and the different types of DNA genetic testing.
So there is several different styles or types of genetic testing available on the market, and this is rather confusing, so it's important to make it clear.
Right, like I have a hard time with it. So.
Yes, no, absolutely. And that's why I asked you, you know, what are we going to be talking about today? Because we can talk about all sorts of things. But needless to say, there's the basic kind of breed ancestry testing, which is the really kind of sexy thing right now and what a lot of folks are doing for their dogs.
Pet dogs, companion dogs,
exactly.
Right?
You know, primarily mixed breed dogs.
My shelter dog is made up of...
Yeah, the dog I found on the streets of Portland is half Russell Terrier, a quarter Australian cattle dog, and a quarter, you know, mixed beyond three generations.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So that's kind of your basic wisdom panel. And then there is direct mutation testing for traits or for diseases. Oftentimes you can get this in, you know, one disease or trait here, one or two there, that sort of thing. And so that's kind of been the standard for disease testing and trait testing for a long time.
In DNA testing.
In DNA testing, absolutely.
Von Willebrand's comes to
exactly,
mind.
Exactly. Von Willebrand's type 1, type 2, type 3, etc. Brown coat collar testing, etc., etc.
Right.
If you want to find out if your dog carries one of these mutations. But what we've been able to do at Wisdom Health is create what we call a panel test. And that's primarily what we're going to be talking about today, which is for our breeders, the breeder product is called Optimal Selection. And it has over 180 genetic disorder mutations on there. So you can get it all done at once. You can test for over 25 different traits. So coat colors, coat types, chondrodysplasia.
Okay, so this is, I forgot to mention this earlier. So I have a German wire hair pointer. It doesn't get collie eye disease.
No.
When I send in my test, do I say only check it for these things that I care about? Or how do we do that?
So what it does is it takes into account which breed you provide and says, okay, well, of the 182, I think, genetic disorders that we're testing for, these are the three that are most important in your breed. We also tested for 179 others and your dog is clear. These are the three main ones. So it's broken out by what is identified and correlated with which breed. If there's a new mutation that's been identified in the German wire hair pointers, but we don't know how relevant it is clinically, is this really going to cause a problem in your breed because it's been found in Labradors to cause a problem? That gets into a separate section and that gets flagged. So you'll get that your dog is positive for it, but we don't know the clinical relevance yet. And therefore, you're going to want to take this, note it, but, you know, don't remove this dog from... Don't freak out about it yet. Yeah, until we have more data and information to prove that it's really a problem in the German wire hair pointer. It's more of an FYI, and we're following up with breed clubs and breeders to try to do some clinical studies to analyze that. And then the other component of that optimal selection test is around identifying the genetic diversity through a few thousand markers in what your dog has in comparison to the population, your breed population. And then you can also use our breeder tool to look at potential matches and mates that take into account not only the disease results, but also the diversity results to produce hopefully healthier puppies based on genetic diversity as well as avoiding doubling up on something.
Exactly. Okay. So this is another question that came to me. I knew I had thought of it and I forgot to ask you earlier. How do you have the statistical numbers? So you've tested like 500 golden retrievers, but you've only tested 12 German wire hair pointers.
Right.
So how does that work? I'm saying those are like made up numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. The minimum is 30 dogs to have tested to give you some sort of frequency information.
Okay. Okay.
But once we have 30 dogs on any given test, so as new tests get added on, you might get the results for, you know, the frequencies, allele frequencies for these other ones, but this one is still an NA until we have at least 30 dogs tested. And then it will provide you with not only your dog's results, but you can also see what the allele frequency is in your breeds.
That's what I'm kind of thinking about. Mm-hmm. So do the test results sort of change as dogs are added in?
Your dog's results, but the allele frequencies will change over time as more dogs get added in. And anybody can go to mybreeddata.com.
And we will have a link on the website.
And there you can look up any of the breeds that we've tested. And depending, again, on how many dogs, and it will tell you, you know, are we under 30? Mm-hmm. Are we 30 to 100? Are we over 100? That sort of thing. Okay. And give you allele frequencies for each of the genetic mutations. And there's over 200 mutations there. Some of the mutations are patented, so we can't report them out on a commercial basis unless we have a license agreement at this point in time. But we can, on a research basis, report that information.
Okay, that works. That makes sense. So you were talking just a little bit before about the genetic diversity. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should probably touch briefly on why genetic diversity is important. Like, it's important to have a breed, so you don't want a whole lot of diversity, but you need enough diversity that you're not, as you say, jamming up those genes. So let's touch on that just for a second.
So as we discussed earlier, a breed is really a combination of genes/alleles, alleles being, you know, the variants of different genes, that make the dog look this way, act this way, etc. What it is we're aiming for. Exactly. Well over 99% of the DNA in Great Dane is exactly the same as a Chihuahua. You know, it's well under 1% that is different between those two individuals. But that 1% is incredibly important. And so what we want to do is maintain through our testing, and our markers, our diversity markers, are outside of, they aren't like, you know, yellow coat color or black coat color or short legs or whatever, because that doesn't give us a lot of information, because hopefully golden retrievers are fixed for black and are fixed for yellow and are fixed for long legs. So there are fundamental pieces that make up a golden retriever or a German wire hair pointer. And so we don't expect you to alter that. But there's a lot of other areas outside of those handful of genes that are really important to say this is what it takes to be a German wire hair pointer that can have some genetic diversity. And genetic diversity is important because a number of studies in dogs in particular have shown that as you lose genetic diversity, it can impact fertility rates. So decreased litter sizes and increased rate of stillbirths.
Right.
It can also alter health rates or rates of genetic disorders. Several studies have shown that, including ours. And then, you know, decreased hunting ability. That was a really interesting
one. I would love to see that actual study, because that sort of, for those of us who have bird dogs, sort of flies in the face of the L-Hugh pointers that were as inbred as a dog can get and set type, and certainly didn't impact performance.
Well, so I mean, they might have gotten lucky. And that's the thing. And Jerry Bell and I have had this conversation about his idea is that you can have healthy, highly inbred dogs, and you can, but you have to be incredibly selective to achieve that. And personally, my opinion is the average breeder doesn't have the time and money and resources to be that selective. The example in other species would be like laboratory mice. Those are the most, I think, inbred thing on the planet, practically. But they have been through, I don't know how many generations of breeding and selection. And if you even, you know, have an eyelash out of place, you're removed. So they've been hugely selective. Other examples would be some of these island populations of horses and things like that, where, again, it's nature selecting. Right. You don't get to pass on your genes if you can't survive.
If you drown when you swim off the island and the Chincoteague ponies, you didn't make it.
Exactly. So that being said, you know, the average breeder doesn't have, like I said, the time and, you know, number of dogs necessary, and quite honestly, probably not even enough information to be that highly selective to get to that. So in your hunter case, it may very well be that, you know, they got lucky. And they were probably highly selective and really smart.
Yeah, really smart and highly selective. I mean, you're talking about Bob Wheel, who is L-Hugh pointers in pointing breed people is like bad Whitney was got. Seriously. And I think there are master breeders like that out there.
Absolutely.
But for people who are still getting started, who mm-hmm. need additional information, your point mm-hmm. is that this gives you a much better framework.
And even for people who are choosing to have a fairly tight line breeding, you have some genetic diversity there. Mm-hmm. So let's maintain it. Let's, you know, not by chance bottleneck and lose it by virtue of just, you know, a quote unquote bad decision from a genetic diversity point, but right. a great decision from all these other cases.
Right.
Where, you know, this will tell you the genetic diversity in each dog will be different, even if they're full siblings.
Right. I loved that when you were talking about that earlier today, that these puppies aren't twins.
No.
And I'm not entirely sure how many people in the world realize that. They're not twins.
They're not
each
twins.
One is different.
Yep.
And I thought that was fascinating as I was, you know, doing some early genetic stuff. I'm like, they could be that far apart.
Yeah. On average, they're basically, I talk about them as non-identical twins, or they're essentially siblings. They're as close genetically as you are to your brother or mm-hmm. your sister. Mm-hmm. Your individual, you know, short of being a twin, an identical
twin,
you know, their individual sperm and egg mm-hmm. coming together. Mm-hmm. So on average, they have 50% of their DNA is the same with their siblings.
Right.
And it's like a pachinko machine. The genes start out up here, and the ball little comes down, and
right.
which bin it falls into
right.
is what each puppy inherits.
Right.
And so the diversity score you might get for this dog versus his brother could be vastly different by chance.
Interesting.
And so when you're looking at making a breeding decision, you have
right.
a bitch, and you're like,
right.
okay, do I go with this boy or that boy? You know,
right.
they could be brothers. Their COIs would be completely identical. And yet, one may prove genetically to be a better match from a diversity perspective.
Right, right. Okay, see, I think that's really, really useful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this cousin or that brother or whatever?
Yep.
Okay.
So if you're
all
in
right.
your line,
mm-hmm.
you know, you mm-hmm. might just need to be looking at, okay, these two dogs are essentially equivalent mm-hmm. across all my measures. You know, they're brothers, mm-hmm. their COIs are the same, they're both wonderfully temperamented, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. But genetic diversity-wise, you know, you might find that there is, you will find that there is going to be a difference.
Okay. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer, so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it, because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right. So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-sections.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they? And then the deductible. And those
right.
deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in
mm-hmm.
for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
So you talk about COI. Let's define that for people.
Yep. COI, coefficient of inbreeding or inbreeding coefficient. Yep. Absolutely. Which is just basically a pedigree analysis of the relatedness or the likelihood that any one gene will have two copies of the same material from both sides of your family tree.
And I learned it when I was a little kid with my mom, and we'd write the pedigree and it'd be 50, 25, 12 and a half, 60, you know, like that. And now they have fancy calculations and computer programs. And I
couldn't sit down and calculate it.
No, I still do. I write it on my pedigrees, 50, 25. But I think that that is how a lot of us who are kind of school breeders.
That was the tool that you had. And that was better than nothing by
valuable tool.
Absolutely.
Can just everybody has a different opinion of what's an acceptable number of COI, right? But I think what you're talking about, the actual genetics, cellular level, that's like a whole new ballgame.
Exactly. We're going from play stish to
high stakes poker here.
Exactly. It's a great analogy.
It is pretty much what it is. So you talked again just a little bit earlier about bottlenecks. And I asked you to really, let's kind of focus on this one because I see it in so many breeds. Popular sire syndrome.
It's certainly a concern and a problem. So as I mentioned in my talk, there was a study in 2008 out of the UK where they took Kennel Club records because they were digitized. And so it was easy for them to pull the data. And they looked over the course of 8 generations. And within about, I think it was 6 generations or so, they predicted that 10 different breeds, or most of these 10 breeds that they looked at, had lost more than 90% of their genetic diversity. In 6 generations.
It's just insanity. And that's in England.
And that's in England.
You know, that's not here.
Yeah.
And England, they don't have maybe as large a space, but they also are, I don't think they're nearly as focused on super, super tight breeding as they are here.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't answer that. I don't know for sure. But certainly they had some limitations in their breeding programs because they couldn't import dogs as easily as we can here and that sort of thing. So they're really an island, literally, in terms of their breeding population. Wow. And one of the main factors that they found was popular sires impacting the loss of genetic diversity. So, for example, golden retrievers.
Yes, that
golden
one.
Retrievers, 10% of the males had over 100 puppies apiece.
Right.
And they had an effective population size of 67 dogs.
Jeez. So, of the thousands of golden retrievers that they looked at,
dogs in the 6th and 7th generation, they had 31,259 dogs.
Okay, no, you got to start this over. Yeah. Tell me this.
31,259 dogs total in the 6th and 7th generation that they looked at. And of that, they had only 67 genetically unique individuals.
That is insanity.
Yes. So basically, all of those dogs were one very small, maybe not so happy family.
Yeah. So your definition then, if we can put a definition, a label on it, popular sire. Anytime you see a dog with over 100 puppies produced.
That was the definition they used in England. Yep, for this study.
Okay.
Yeah. For popular females, I think it was bitches that had over 40 puppies.
That's a lot of puppies.
Yeah. So for the females, 3 breeds, golden retriever, German shepherd dog, and Labrador retriever, had 1% of their females being popular dams having had 40 or more puppies.
Right. That sounds a whole lot more like reality.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. But that's still, I mean, even that is significant. Truly.
Yes.
I mean,
that's still a lot of genetic influence.
You breed your bitch 4 times and it has 10 puppies each time. It's a lot of puppies.
Yeah, that is. And that's a large influence, genetic influence on the population.
Right.
But certainly, as we all know, males, it's easier to get them to popular sire levels than females.
And so interesting, you were talking about that. The 6th generation pedigree with 31,000 dogs in it that was really only like 67 individuals.
Right.
It's crazy. So your popular sire syndrome also affects dogs where that dog, one popular dog sired this one, and then that one was really popular, and that sired a whole bunch of them, and then, oh, wait for it, this one's really popular, and then that. So you have an effective
Right.
daisy chain there.
Absolutely. Yep. Fortunately or unfortunately, good can beget good mm-hmm. until it goes bad.
Well, and we talk about you're trying to still set type. And I mm-hmm. loved what you said about the genetic testing, that it doesn't tell you who to breed. It tells you who to breed to.
Right. Exactly.
Which Gerald Bell, I think, made a similar mm-hmm. comment. Yep. And I think that is so
critical,
important for people to hear. And I also loved your comment that this is the last thing you do.
Yeah.
Right? So you do your confirmation and your
temperament testing right. and your functional testing mm-hmm. and, you know, can they mm-hmm. perform in the way mm-hmm. they need mm-hmm. to? All of that sort of thing, I think, needs to be your first levels of understanding in mm-hmm. terms of making a breeding decision. Because if this isn't a healthy dog that can do what it's supposed to do and fits whatever standards you're trying to achieve, it's not worth breeding. Now, once you've gotten to that...
Your lips to God's ears.
So once you've, you know, made those decisions, then let's take it the next step and look at genetic diversity on top mm-hmm. of that. Yes, we ultimately want to work towards more diverse dogs, mm-hmm. but to our discussion earlier, we mm-hmm. don't want to lose the essence of the Golden Retriever right. or the German Wirehair Pointer right. solely in the name of diversity.
And I think, too, one of the conversations you were having in the presentation today, talking about making some of these diversity decisions, and that sometimes you find yourself in a place that you have to make some decisions that maybe the dog doesn't look just exactly how you want it to, mm-hmm. or maybe it doesn't have quite the level of performance or something, mm-hmm. but that you have got to do something. And so you've got to decide where to give.
Yeah. I think that's been the case for probably generations of breeders that you have, you know, you're like, I like this one, except his top line isn't great. I'm going to breed with this other dog mm-hmm. to improve his mm-hmm. top line. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's where diversity is kind of the same way.
Right.
This is a great dog. He's just a little bit more inbred than I would like. Mm-hmm. I can counter that by breeding him appropriately to a dog that's going to help balance that.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is not to, you know, make dramatic shifts in mm-hmm. one generation.
Mm-hmm.
You can, depending on who you choose, but mm-hmm. it's more just, you know, trend. Work towards more genetic diversity in the future and moving kind of the curve of diversity within your population or your
move
breed.
The needle.
Move the needle over. Mm-hmm. Move that, shift that curve towards diversity over time.
And so we're working with all of this. We're working with the basic philosophy, the basic mindset, if you will, is a conversation you've had with Gerald Bell,
mm-hmm.
that diversity makes healthier dogs. And so I thought it was really interesting, the study that you put up, that in certain ones of these diseases, purebreds were actually healthier than mixed breeds.
So yeah, we looked at over 100,000 dogs, about 18,000 purebreds mm-hmm. in 330 plus breeds across, I think, 10 or more countries.
Right.
So it was a really global group in comparison to about 83,000 mixed breed dogs, mm-hmm. primarily from the U.S. since that's the population we had mm-hmm. available. And what we found was the mixed breed dogs are more likely to carry a genetic disorder. And actually, the dog that had the most genetic mutations that we found mm-hmm. was five.
That's
and
crazy.
Yeah, he carried five different mutations, he or she, I don't know what the sex was. And it was a mixed breed dog. Probably because, you know, as I mentioned, mixed breed dogs are not getting screened before they're randomly breeding or what have you,
right.
by and large. But the purebred dogs were more likely to be at risk, genetically at risk for a
right.
condition. So they're more likely to be doubled up. And the interesting thing we found that you wanted to point out was that we did find of the 152 disorders that were mutations that we looked at, there were 25 that we didn't find in mixed breeds or purebreds. So hopefully we've bred away from those. We can't say entirely. We didn't test every dog in the world,
right.
but we tested a good number. There were 34 that we
yes.
found only in the mixed breed population
right. so
and not in the purebred.
That.
Likely because the purebreds are testing for it and are breeding away from it.
Right.
So they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yay!
Yes.
But I think that's very important. I think it's something that we all need to hear.
Yes.
Right?
We need
We're
the pat on the back.
Right?
Absolutely.
We're doing it right. I think that the pet owning community needs to hear that. We're the ones doing it right, people!
Yep.
You
yep.
know? And
yep.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think that that's super important.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but we also don't want to be like, okay, well, this dog is genetically clear of this six diseases, therefore
right.
he's perfect, and, you know, this other dog that's a carrier is bad. We don't want to throw that out.
Right.
You know, work on a breed and replace kind of theory.
Right.
We don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, as we all like to say, that a carrier is not a bad thing. You can breed them appropriately.
And that goes back to who to breed them to.
Exactly. Exactly. And awesome. Depending on the disorder, you know, certain disorders like exercise-induced collapse You can breed an affected dog with exercise-induced collapse to a clear dog, and you'll produce all carriers. And then the next generation, hopefully you can find a dog that's, you know, clear, that, you know, you can carry on and not have to worry about exercise-induced collapse. But, you know, it's one of those things that through management you can control if you've got bigger fish to fry, like epilepsy or something like that.
Right. And that's the one I'm waiting. When are you guys coming up with a marker on that one?
There is a couple epilepsy markers, but they're pretty rare breeds by and large.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're great for those breeds, but, you know, it's really tiny breeds that most people don't have. But the problem is that epilepsy is just a really complicated, complex.
So huge.
Yeah, geneticists have been looking at it for...
Well, and that's in people.
10 plus years. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that one's going to be a tough nut to crack. Hip dysplasia, you know, there have been several attempts.
Polygenic.
It's polygenic. Yeah. Yeah, that one still is tough. Atopy is another big one that, you know, we're looking into. Other people, I'm sure, are as well. Hopefully we'll have something more in a few years. But those are big, complicated ones.
Right. And those are ones that are more, as they say, on the phenotype, right? Like it's x-rays or blood draws. It's not
More phenotypic testing. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right. Well, Angela, thank you. I really, really appreciate your time. I know you're exhausted. You already gave this whole speech once and I made you give it again. So thank you.
No worries. No worries.
I really appreciate it. And I know my listeners do too.
Great.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
Spectacular. We might be a little facetious, right? Some days. Yeah. Okay, so we are talking about today flat ironing on some of our drop-cutted breeds, correct?
Correct.
Wonderful. Speak to me.
All right. So I've had like quite a few questions come in to Leading Edge Dog Show Academy about flat ironing. You know, these are people kind of new to the show world and, you know, they see other people flat ironing and they kind of want to know, how do I do it? How do I start? Blah, blah. So I just thought that I would just go with some general tips for flat ironing your drop coated breed.
Excellent.
So some of the things I know about flat ironing are this. You are better off to buy a higher end tool that gets a little bit hotter and it has like an ion coating on the hot parts of it so that the hair slips through easier. And the idea is that ideally you only want to make one pass of the straightening iron over that course of hair to cut down on the damage that the tool is going to do to your dog's hair.
Right.
So kind of that's my first tip. My other tip is that I would use some kind of heat protectant spray, you know, for each pass. So you're going to clip all the excess hair out of the way. You're going to take a small section of hair, comb it, give it a light mist with that some kind of heat protectant, and then just give it a pass with your iron. Now, my other tips for this would be, just like anything else, don't flat iron your dog for the first time at the dog show.
Good tip. Very good tip.
Give yourself a break. Like, we're not perfect at all these new things that we try. So bath and dry your dog as normal and then flat iron your dog. So different reasons why you're going to do this. A, you need to know how long it's going to take you, because what if you think, oh, that's going to take me 45 minutes, but it really takes you an hour and 15 minutes and you have 2/3 of your dog ironed and you're getting called into the ring. Well, that's not going to be helpful. So that's my first tip. So do it at home. And then you're also going to see what areas look good flat ironed. And maybe there's different parts on your dog that don't really look good when you flat iron them. Because that can happen too. Like some of the hair is naturally flatter and some of the hair is naturally more cottony and is going to take more time and effort when you do go to pot iron it.
Well, and I think that's a really good point, Allison, talking about hair type when we're doing straightening, right? Because different coats, the Lhasa coat versus the Shih Tzu coat versus the TT coat, for example, all three different coats.
Right. And the other thing too, the other reason why I want you the first time you flat iron your dog to do it at home is this, is that, you know, if you do have a breed that there is trimming around the feet or trimming, you know, like on an underline or whatever there is, no matter how good you are at trimming, the trimming is going to look different after your dog is flat ironed. So not only at the show do you need to have the extra time to flat iron your dog, but then you would also have to potentially, if it's a trimmed breed, retrim it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time you go to flat iron your dog, do it at home and give yourself enough time to have the dog retrimmed if it's a trimmed breed at the end of the flat ironing.
Excellent. That is very, very good tip. And definitely, like you say, heat protectant and conditioner on those areas you're straightening. Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. All right. Well, listeners, don't forget your Pure Dog Talk 25 when you check out, because I know you guys are going to the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy courses and signing up, but make sure you put in that Pure Dog Talk 25 because you get a discount when you do that. Yeah?
Exactly. And we would love to have you. We're getting some new courses on Setters and Springers this month.
Yes, I saw that.
So we're really excited about that. And of course, your Pure Dog Talk discount is going to count towards everything we have.
I love it. All right. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Laura.
And now, a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. Keep your ad simple and make sure it focuses on the dog. Very often in advertising, less is more. American Dog Fancier, affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.